civilization called Wake Up, which is something we collectively need to do. Demure followed with his track After the Rain, which has followed what we're listening to now is Sultan and Shepherd's Walls. A call for system change, whether we're proactive or reactive, it's an inevitability. Back to the sacred theme, regardless of whether you want to ascribe to a faith or science, there's a duty to see the signs and take some moral action. If you're a faith, we don't want to poison Eden with the sinful greed that drives our consumption of fossil fuels. After all, if we're cast out of this Eden, Earth, we have nowhere else to go. We hope you enjoyed the show this week. Next week, we'll be pausing for the long weekend, so it'll be a replay of a previous show. Back in the USSR is up next. I always push him a little bit too far, but he's been very kind. We hope to see you again next week, and until then, we wish you a good night and good vibes.
Listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried. And brothers and sisters, it has been a hard past week. It's been a hard slog, a hard struggle. I'm here. I'm in one place, one piece, I should say, as well as in one place. And a bit disheveled, pretty tired. But nonetheless, I made it through back to you. It's been rough. You know, I played that song, White Skin Black Heart, by Midnight Oil, Australian band Midnight Oil. Reason why I played it is because, as I've talked about before on the show, I am deeply disturbed by the far-right threat that exists in this city and during this election. I can't be too much more specific than that because, of course, we have rules here at CFRU. We have... surrounding the election, I cannot name names. I cannot name the people involved here in spreading this far-right disease to my hometown. But I think you can figure out who they are. And I just, you know, want to express my love and my solidarity, profound solidarity, to those friends and comrades of mine who have stood with me over the past week as we have faced and stood against and opposed this far-right threat and the racism and the xenophobia and all that stuff that they bring with them. The people who stood with me as well as, you know, I stood with them against this rising fascist tide that we see. It's not an easy thing. You know, when these bigots start coming out of the woodwork and stuff like that, start getting applause. Start muscling their way in, start threatening, start intimidating, harassing, terrorizing, intimidating, you know, all that stuff. This is what they do. And of course, they're cowards. You know, fascists are always cowards. They always prey on those they see as the most vulnerable. Like, this is what they do. And like I say, I'm not going further into detail about this kind of stuff because I'm on CFRU. You know? And CFRU has already gotten hit hard by Doug Ford's legislation, Student Choice Initiative, and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want them to get into trouble. And also, there are other people, you know, who could end up being victims of far-right violence and, you know, intimidation and threats and whatnot. So I'm not going to go into detail. I'm not going to, you know, name names. I'm not going to tell you who my comrades are and all that kind of stuff, like who've made this stand and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to get into those details. But needless to say, there are brave people in this city who have been taking a stand, you know, against the hate, against the the threats and all the stuff that's going on, like the, you know, the online right-wing trolls standing against them, pushing back, pushing for justice, for dignity, for all people. You know, against the far right that's trying to muscle in and like smash everything. It takes courage to fight back in that way. And I would just want to make that, just, you know, salute those people who have done that, you know, who have made that stand. You know, and you all know who you are. If you're listening right now, those people who have stood with me this past week, this very rough week, as we stood against the far right in the city. And this is your poem. This is the poem that I wrote for you. I wish that I could write of happy things, repaint the world in the vibrant colors that have been brutally stripped away. I wish that I could create a world where none of this exists, where the monsters are nothing but bad dreams, no more lies, hate, fear, abuse, suffering, greed. I wish that the rivers did not flow with tears and blood. Brothers and sisters, I wish that I could write of happy things. And it's only when I am with you that I am reminded that I can. Because I see you. I see your welcoming smiles even as the sky is falling down on us. I see your love even when our backs are against the wall. I see your strength even when attacks come from all sides. And I am happy. Happy that we have what the enemy can never take. happy that we are not alone, and happy that we hold a different world in our hearts. You know, solidarity. So that's the poem I'm dedicating to my comrades. You know, the people who stand against fascism in the far right in Guelph, you know, who fight back against these bigots coming in. And this next song I'm going to play is also basically for those brave people who take that stand, not just in Guelph, but all around the world, and fight back against fascism, against these bigoted forces who are basically running around almost tearing the world apart right now. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Yeah.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros with Ramshackle Day Parade. And that's a song I wanted to dedicate, along with that poem which I performed, which I wrote when I couldn't sleep on Saturday, I guess more Sunday morning. Wrote that poem, you know, for my comrades, for my brothers and sisters, you know, in struggle. And I dedicate that song to them as well. You know, those who fight against fascism, you know, those brave people who fight against the far right in this city and around the world. What I want to do tonight is I want to do some poetry. I did some poetry for you last week. I even did a whole play for you last week, frankly, one act play. What was that? It was Peter Barnes, the preacher, about Jacques Roux, one of the most radical figures in the French Revolution. Did a whole one-act play for you last week. This week, I'm just going to focus on the poetry. I tell you, doing a whole play, one-act play, that's a real jawbreaker right there. That really can take the wind out of you. So I'm just going to stick with poetry tonight because I'm actually feeling pretty tired. And like I say, it was a full day, long day. So, but I want to get into this. I want to give you poetry from one of my most favorite poets of all time. This is Bertolt Brecht, German communist poet who did amazing work, did a lot of anti-fascist work, you know, in the 30s, 40s, even in the 50s, and just was just so involved in the struggle, you know, against fascism, against Nazism in those days. And of course, you know, talk about needing courage for that, you know, like when you're homeland, the country you were born in, Germany, just basically goes to hell in a handbasket, you know, with Nazi takeover and all that kind of stuff, and he has to flee into exile in 1933. You know, it doesn't return to Germany until like the tail end of the 1940s. You know, I think he went back in 48 or 49, and that was because the McCarthy witch hunts were going on in the States, and he basically got red-baited out of the United States, had to go to, basically ended up in East Berlin. But just to kind of give you a sense of who he is, I want to start with kind of just a personal poem that he wrote, you know, which isn't so much political. It just kind of gets into his, you know, who he is and some of his state of mind. And so this is of poor BB, of poor Bertolt Brecht. That's the title of the poem. And it goes like this. I, Bertolt Brecht, came out of the Black Forest. My mother moved me into the cities as I lay inside her body. And the coldness of the forest will be inside me until my dying day. In the asphalt city, I'm at home. From the very start, provided with every last sacrament, with newspapers and tobacco and brandy, to the end mistrustful, lazy, and content. I'm polite and friendly to people. I put on a hard hat because that's what they do. I say, they are animals with quite a peculiar smell. And I say, does it matter? I am too. Before noon, on my empty rocking chairs, I'll sit a woman or two, and with an untroubled eye, look at them steadily and say to them, here you have someone on whom you can't rely. Towards evening, it's men that I gather round me, and then we address one another as gentlemen. They're resting their feet on my tabletops and say, things will get better for us, and I don't ask when. In the gray light before the morning, the pine trees piss, and their vermin, the birds, raise their twitter and cheep. At that hour in the city, I will drain my glass, then throw the cigar butt away and worriedly go to sleep. We have sat, an easy generation, in houses held to be indestructible. Thus we built those tall boxes on the Isle of Manhattan and those thin aerials that amuse the Atlantic swell. Of those cities will remain what passed through them, the wind. The house makes glad the eater. He clears it out. We know that we're only tenants, provisional ones, and after us, there will come nothing worth talking about. In the earthquakes to come, I very much hope I shall keep my cigar alight, embittered or no. I, Bertolt Brecht, carried off to the asphalt cities from the black forests inside my mother long ago.
Deinem Kopf lebt höchstens eine Laus, denn für dieses Leben ist der Mensch nicht schlau genug. Niemals merkt er eben diesen Lug und Flug. Ja, mach nur einen Plan, sei nur ein großes Licht und mach dann noch nen zweiten Plan, den tun sie beide nicht. Denn für dieses Leben ist der Mensch nicht schlecht genug, doch sein höheres Streben ist ein schöner Zug. Ja, renn nur nach dem Glück, doch renne nicht zu sehr, denn alle rennen nach dem Glück, das Glück rennt hinterher. Denn für dieses Leben ist der Mensch nicht anspruchslos genug, drum ist all sein Streben nur ein Selbstbetrug. Der Mensch ist gar nicht gut, drum hau ihn auf den Hut. Hast du ihn auf den Hut gehaut, dann wird er vielleicht gut. Denn für dieses Leben ist der Mensch nicht gut genug. Darum hau ihn eben ruhig auf den Hut.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU. That was actually Bertolt Brecht singing. He actually did that on one or two occasions. It's not like he had the best voice, as you probably can tell, but he did sing some of his own songs. Like, that was his own song that he wrote. He wrote that. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. That's that's a very difficult jawbreaker German name for that song. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, but it was off the Threepenny Opera, which is one of his most famous works. I mean, Bertolt Brecht was a major playwright, and he also co-wrote quite a lot of musicals, and that was probably his biggest one. You can they even made a movie out of the Threepenny Opera. You can even find it on YouTube. German movie with English subtitles. You can find the Threepenny Opera on YouTube. It has an amazing bunch of songs. Actually, it's an amazing story, actually. And, of course, he did, like, tons of plays, and, like, usually there's music for his plays, too. You know, he was always working with somebody else on plays, whether that was, like, Kurt Weill, you know, or if it was Hans Eisler or one of these other, like, composers that he worked with over the years. So he was quite a talented dude, and, of course, I guess in that particular point, he just felt the need to sing one of his own songs and record it. You know, chose a good spirit. Even though you know you haven't got the greatest voice, you sing anyway. You know, that's you have to do that sometimes. So the poem that I did before the break of Poor BB, that was one of his early poems. I think he did that in the 1920s sometime. So I want to do another one. This Bertolt Brecht, of course, was a communist. He was, you know, deeply committed to socialism and to the emancipation of working class people. And he understood, he well understood history and how the role of working people in history as being the builders of society and the builders of civilization and all that stuff, how that has been largely erased. You know, you don't hear about what ordinary people do in history. You know, instead you hear about kings and emperors and all these, you know, popes and presidents and all this sort of stuff. You don't hear about ordinary working people and the kind of struggles they go through and the kind of contributions they make. And it was largely in response to this, how history has been written, you know, this distorted way that history has been written, that Bertolt Brecht wrote this following poem here that I want to do. It's an amazing poem. It's called Questions from a Worker Who Reads. And it's quite an iconic socialist poem, actually. Questions from a Worker Who Reads. Who built Thebes of the Seven Gates? In the books, you will find the names of kings. Did the kings haul up the lumps of rock? And Babylon, many times demolished, who raised it up so many times? In what houses of gold-glittering Lima did the builders live? Where, on the evening that the wall of China was finished, did the masons go? Great Rome is full of triumphal arches. Who erected them? Over whom did the Caesars triumph? Had Byzantium much praised in song? Have only palaces for its inhabitants? Even in fabled Atlantis, the night the ocean engulfed it, the drowning still bawled for their slaves. Young Alexander conquered India. Was he alone? Caesar beat the Gauls. Did he not have even a cook with him? Philip of Spain wept when his armada went down. Was he the only one to weep? Frederick II won the Seven Years' War. Who else won it? Every page a victory. Who cooked a feast for the victors? Every 10 years a great man. Who paid the costs? So many reports. So many questions.
Move along, serve the people. Let anyone want to know.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Handsome Furs with Serve the People. And, of course, before that I performed Bertolt Brecht's poem, Questions from a Worker Who Reads, which really talks about how the writing of history doesn't serve the people and largely erases the efforts of working class and oppressed people from the historical record, and replaces them with the deeds of kings and emperors and presidents and all these kind of, you know, great men. Who in the end, in most cases, are not so great. And are the oppressors and exploiters. I mean, that was what basically Bertolt Brecht was pointing out there. Now, Bertolt Brecht, of course, as I mentioned before, had to leave Germany after the Nazis took power. You know, he's a socialist, he's a leftist. He had to flee for his life, basically, in 1933. So the next piece I want to do is something he did basically when he went into exile and had to go from country to country, you know, trying to find a place where he could stay. And it's called A Sonnet in Emigration. And honestly, the next two poems I'm going to do basically are in solidarity with the refugees and the immigrants and the various people who are being targeted by the far right now. You know, they're being targeted by the far right for demonization and attacks and this kind of thing. You know, all across North America and Europe. So these two poems are basically in solidarity with those refugees and migrants. So Sonnet in Immigration by Bertolt Brecht. Chased from my country, now I have to see if there's some shop or bar that I can find where I can sell the products of my mind. Again, I tread the roads well known to me, worn smooth by those accustomed to defeat. I'm on my way, but I don't yet know to whom. Wherever I go, they ask me, spell your name. And oh, that name was once accounted great. I should be glad now, were it known to none. Like somebody for whom a warrant's out, I hardly think they'd rush to take me on. I dealt before with people such as these, and I suspect there may be a growing doubt whether, in fact, my services would please. Now, the fighters, the second poem here, to the fighters in the concentration camps. If I was going to dedicate them to anyone, it would probably be, of course, those people locked in Trump's, you know, detention camps and facilities and the kind of, and undergoing basically in torture and torment right now at the hands of ICE, which has basically become the Waffen-SS of the United States. You know, basically the, that's, this poem would be dedicated to those refugees who are currently being detained by the U.S. government. And, of course, also to the migrants who are being detained in Canada because of many of them. To the fighters in the concentration camps, and, of course, he dedicated these to those imprisoned by the Nazis. You who can hardly be reached, buried in the concentration camps, cut off from every human word, subjected to brutalities, beaten down but not confuted, vanquished but not forgotten. Little as we hear about you, we still hear you are incorrigible, unteachable, they say, in your commitment to the proletarian cause, unshakably persuaded that there are still in Germany two kinds of people, exploiters and exploited, and that the class struggle alone can liberate the masses in cities and countryside from their misery. Not by beatings, we hear, nor by hanging, can you be brought to the point of saying that nowadays 2 × 2 = 5. So you are vanished, but not forgotten, beaten down, but never confuted, along with all those incorrigibly fighting, unteachably set on the truth, now and forever the true leaders of Germany. And he did that at the time when, of course, the Spanish Civil War was raging, when people from all over the world, including from Germany, had the Ernst Thälmann Brigade of German communists who went to fight against the Nazis in Spain. You know, alongside people from, you know, 15 other different international brigades, you know, from like, you know, Britain, from Ireland, from like Canada, from the States, from all over the place, from Italy. And even those who didn't have any, you know, an international brigade, I mean, there were people who came from other countries, like people came from China even, you know, to fight against fascism in Spain. And the people who were fighting against fascism there understood that they were in solidarity with the people in the concentration camps who were also resisting and fighting back against fascism, even though they were confined and being tortured. So what I want to play right now is a very iconic song by Irish singer Christy Moore, Viva la Quinta Brigada, celebrating those who fought against fascism during the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
To try and stem the rise in such a time. Franco's eyes were the powerful and wealthy, and Brian's man came from the other side. Even the olives were bleeding as the battle for Madrid thundered on. Truth and love against the force of evil, brotherhood against the fascist hand. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no faster on the pitch to play and fight. Adelante is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight.
Keep it going there now.
Tommy Woods at 17 died in Cordova, with the Vienna here to hold a gun. From Dublin to the Via del Rio, where he fought and died beneath the Spanish sun. Many Irish heard the call of Franco, joined Hitler and Mussolini too. Propaganda from the Portland newspaper had the lucky to enlist in Blue Shirt group, and the word came from the church support the Nazis, and the men of Clough failed again. But the bishops blessed the blue shirts in delirium as the sail begins to swastika to Spain. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no pass around to bless the day and fight. Adelante is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight. This song is a tribute to Frank Ryan.
Tumbleton and Jim's family from the ball. Jack Nantee, Tommy Patton and Frank Conroy. Jim Foley, Johnny Fox and Dick O'Neill.
Bread of the people. Justice is the bread of the people. Sometimes it is plentiful, sometimes it is scarce, sometimes it tastes good, sometimes it tastes bad. When the bread is scarce, there is hunger. When the bread is bad, there is discontent. Throw away the bad justice, baked without love, kneaded without knowledge. Justice without flavor, with a gray crust. The stale justice that comes too late. If the bread is good and plentiful, the rest of the meal can be excused. One cannot have plenty of everything all at once. Nourished by the bread of justice, the work can be achieved, from which plenty comes. As daily bread is necessary, so is daily justice. It is even necessary several times a day. From morning till night, at work, enjoying oneself, at work which is an enjoyment, in hard times and in happy times, the people require the plentiful, wholesome, daily bread of justice. Since the bread of justice then is so important, who, friends, shall bake it? Who bakes the other bread? Like the other bread, the bread of justice must be baked by the people. Plentiful, wholesome, daily. And that was Bread of the People, another poem by Bertolt Brecht. There was a man who lived a full life. With all his imperfections, he was definitely an imperfect individual. But nonetheless, I consider him an upright man. Somebody who stood against fascism and sacrificed so much during that struggle. Just as we must sacrifice a lot now. We who struggle against fascism today, we who struggle against the far right today, right here, right now. It's not an easy thing. It's hard, it's scary. You know? But we're not alone. And we support each other. We're brothers and sisters, we're comrades and friends. And we stand together. And together we stand upright. And we do the right thing. We're internationalists. We don't just focus on right here, right now. We understand our struggle is connected with so many struggles around the world. It's linked. Everything's connected. We're part of the anti-fascist struggle here. We're part of the anti-fascist struggle in Europe. We're part of the fascist struggle in the States, everywhere. And we're doing what must be done, what has to be done. And with all our limitations, we're still taking this stand. And we're fighting back and winning victories. As we will continue to fight back and we will continue to win victories. Just as our ancestors in this struggle, in the Spanish Civil War, in World War II, and beyond, fought back, won real victories, smashed fascism. We need to remember that history. Along with the struggles of oppressed people and colonized people around the world who fought back against colonialism and imperialism and the forces trying to crush them. We need to be standing upright, just like the man who was the subject of this song, Thomas Sankara. Revolutionary leader of Burkina Faso, who of course championed the cause of his people, fought against colonialism and died in that struggle against colonialism. Revolutionary hero, hero of mine. And I kind of want to sign off with that. It's been a long week, long, hard week. It's been a struggle, but I still made it here. I still did this show, did what I had to do. And I'm going to keep doing what I have to do. I'm going to be on hiatus for the next few weeks just because, you know, I got responsibilities, I got things I need to do. But I'll be back in a few weeks, and we're going to keep things going back in the USSR. I'm going to leave you here with Marcel Cartier's Standing Upright, song about Thomas Sankara. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
L'imperialisme! L'imperialisme! Le néocolonialisme! Le racisme! Le fascisme! Gloire! Dignité! Pouvoir! La patrie ou la mort! La patrie ou la mort!
Now you may know him as Africa's Che Guevara, Burkina Faso's Captain Thomas Sankara. Born in 1849 in what was Upper Volta, part of French colonial West Africa. Raised in the midst of newfound independence, cheap 1960 from the colonies. But that was just politically, merely on the surface. Economically, the status is really worthless. Is a country really free just because it has a coat of arms, a national anthem, and a flag? But many African leaders did show the way, like Kwame Nkrumah or Sekou Touré. It was in that spirit Sankara came up, a desire to see his people raised up, to be free from the bondage of IMF, and to take meaningful and tangible steps. Standing upright, looking towards the future. Standing upright, saying what we've been used to. Standing upright, living incorruptible. Standing upright, struggle is uncomfortable. Standing upright, homeland to death now. Standing upright, people take the reins now. Standing upright, even when they try to kill. Standing upright, you know you won't be standing here. The 4th of August of 1983, a coup d'etat brings Sankara to the presidency. But it wasn't just replacing a figurehead, it was deeply transformative, beginning with a full-scale attack upon patriarchy to lift women up to status of equality. He took the land back, no longer in a few hands, along with mineral wealth away from the man. He knew that foreign aid was only that a name. Instead of helping, it was there to shackle and chain. The Burkinabe revolution wasn't top-down. Sankara led it, but the people had the power now. The CDRs were the neighborhood committees, which were the source of a local kind of governance. A real democracy was born, freedom in the air, with the French ruling class and all the despair. Standing upright, looking towards the future. Standing upright, saying what we've been used to. Standing upright, living incorruptible. Standing upright, struggle is uncomfortable. Standing upright, homeland to death now. Standing upright, people take the reins now. Standing upright, even when they try to kill. Standing upright, you know the world stands here. Upper Volta was no longer adequate. That name was played out and didn't really represent the direction in which the country was heading. But Burkina Faso was much more telling. The land of upright, land of incorruptibles. Sankara himself exemplified the principle, never using his position as president to attain even slightest privileges. In fact, he had very few personal possessions, a motorbike, an average car, another car. But he shunned using even air conditioning because the Burkinabe people weren't living in a similar state, having an abundance.
but there were forces corrupting and lusting to turn back the clock, sell off the land again, and that's what they did in October 87. Standing upright, looking towards the future. Standing upright, saying what we've been used to. Standing upright, living incorruptible. Standing upright, struggle is incomparable. Standing upright, homeland of death now. Standing upright, people take the reins now. Standing upright, even when they try to kill. Standing upright, you know you're always standing still.
Yeah. 1, 2, 1, 2. Flow combat, EB, I'm born that, beaches storm that, reformat the masses, I'm redrafting the battle map, fat top of town.